Yeah, it's another tricky issue.
You know, I get why they did this today. What are you actually doing other than just running your mouth?
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
Amanda, I feel like we should offer up your laugh as some sort of ringtone for listeners out there, because I can say all the most controversial things in the world, but Amanda's laugh gets way more text messages.
I'd sign up.
Aw, I want it immediately.
No, thank you.
I've already sold 2 units. Benzie, you're in for third.
I'm just downloading it right now on my phone.
And I want the trail wine thing.
It's so good, Christy.
You drink red, do you, or white?
Both.
Both right now.
And a pet nut, which if anyone drinks wine, pet nuts are fabulous.
A yes. Pet nut?
Pet nut.
It's like sparkling wine.
Yeah, it's a natural sparkling.
Ooh.
Classy McGee over here.
Mm. He knows his wine's better than me.
Christy Blatchard is here from the National Post. John Pohl, who is the host of The Pole Position. Robert Benzie, Queen's Park Bureau Chief of the Toronto Star. We will get to the story you brought us in just a few seconds' time. It's great. It's on the Star's website as well. I just retweeted a copy of it if you want to have a read of the full beer store story. But let's start off with St. Mike's. Today we got the report, the Respect and Culture Review, their committee. They have a final report that was put out today. A lot of it identifies, Christy, the issues around the St. Mike's alleged assaults as bullying, kind of glossing over the issue of hazing. Some of the report even indicates that this type of bullying, it happens in other schools. We need a comprehensive bullying strategy going forward. I think this is a little tone deaf from an organization that's been tone deaf from day one.
Well, except this isn't an organization product. This is the product of 4 independent people who have no affiliation with St. Michael's College. One of whom I know, Mark Sandler, he's a lawyer who's done a lot of sort of systemic reviews, handled a lot of cases like that. He's a guy of, you know, impeccable integrity, as I'm sure are the other members. I just don't know them. And I think they certainly listened to what they were told. They said there's a problem with bullying, and there is a problem with bullying in all schools, and that some of the bullying at St. Mike's, some of the people, the students they surveyed, said the bullying had sort of a sexual element to it, so that's uncomfortable. Hazing is only the sort of ritualistic bad behavior, usually of sports teams, and now that happens to fit the allegations in the cases of the 6 accused boys, but it doesn't mean that hazing was a problem. It's bullying and people being picked on because of their race, or people being picked on because they're different.
Here, maybe we need an in-between word here. Maybe that's my problem with it. But when you talk to just some 200 people and have these conversations, and 50 of them, let's say a quarter of them, come back and say there was some form of sexualized bullying, that doesn't, you know, we're not talking about somebody just getting wedgied in the playground.
I haven't read, the report's 130 pages, and I just got it. I haven't read the whole thing by any means, but I don't think the word should be the key. They've made some serious recommendations here. They found a serious problem. And by saying that it's a problem which happens at other schools is not saying that St. Mike should do nothing about it. And it does happen at other schools. I wrote about a case at a Toronto public school this year. A couple of cases, actually.
Okay. Robert?
I mean, Blatch is right. I mean, I think that this is an independent report. St. Mike's, I guess, deserves some credit for going and seeking outsiders to tell them what's wrong. Clearly, they have a cultural problem at the school. I went to a boys' school, not St. Mike's, St. George's, and I know that there is a different kind of a behavior that a bunch of boys will do. But this was not a situation of boys will be boys. This was a situation of assault. And I'm glad that the school is treating it very seriously. They should treat it seriously. That being said, I think all schools can learn from because bullying. Blatch is right. Bullying is a problem at all schools, not just boys' schools.
John,
you know, it's interesting. I saw this, and my immediate reaction was similar to yours, Ryan, where I was like, "Oh, I don't know if that's enough." But then I really thought and replayed the story in my mind. You know, certainly this story was blown up in the media hugely, partly because it's St. Mike's, partly because it's kids, partly because we're all hopped up in 2019 on protecting everyone, and we don't like bullying and hazing and all those things. So it got a lot of press coverage. So it made a lot of us very angry. But from this, what I find interesting is here. Dear St. Mikes actually has an answer now. They actually went and did the work, and they found out that actually even in St. Mikes, we have an issue and we need to deal with it. And it got me thinking about all the other schools that maybe should do this as well. Because if we found this in one place, it's going to be in multiple other schools. And it would just be interesting to see if you took, you know, four or five random schools and mm-hmm. you put together a panel like this, what would they find? Are they right that when they say, hey, it's not just happening here? And then how does it, how does that level compare? I think that would be a fascinating process.
Let's talk a little bit about former Toronto police officer James Forcillo. We found out today he's been granted day parole after serving 21 months of his six-year sentence for the attempted murder of 18-year-old Sammy Yateem back in 2013. It was interesting for a couple of reasons. One, you heard from Forcillo. He spoke to the two Parole Board of Canada members saying, my fear of being stabbed overwhelmed my training. He said there is absolutely zero justification to fire at someone lying flat on their back. I feel like I robbed Mr. Yateem of his life. He was 18. He was just starting life. Had I handled that situation better, had I followed my training, he'd still be here. Christy, the parents of Sammy Yateem were not at this hearing today. Their lawyers saying they knew nothing about it. I think that's fairly insulting. I'd like to know your thoughts on the whole process here.
Well, it's unclear. I know because I sign up for parole board hearings too, and you have to tell the parole board, hey, I want to be notified when there's a hearing or development in this case, and then you are. And it isn't clear, at least in the story I read, that Sammy Yateem's parents had done that. I'm not blaming them in any sense. Okay. I mean, they may not have known, their lawyer may not have told them, somebody should have told them. But the onus, the Crown should have told them, actually. That's who should have told them. Anyway, whether or not they knew, every relative, every parent of a child who is killed in this situation is never going to be happy with the person who killed them getting out on parole ever. But I think Forcillo's remarks to the parole board show a real recognition of, you know, the tragedy of what he did, why he did it, the training, being overwhelmed by his fear. I thought it was a brave thing for him to say. He spent most of his time in segregation. This is an absolutely normal point at which people who are good model inmates would be getting day parole. He's going to spend, I think it's 6 months at a halfway house, and then he's getting out of the city and he's been accepted at a trade school. So I wish him, this is a guy I liked very much, actually, in that trial. I felt very sorry for him because I know he bore no malevolence. He just made mistakes. Bad judgment call.
Robert, when you talk about the parole board, they obviously were sympathetic to his story today, to his words today. I can tell you just from our listeners this afternoon, a lot less sympathetic.
Yeah, I mean, but remember, the purpose of jailing him is to ensure that he is punished for what he did and that he takes responsibility for what he did. And that he doesn't reoffend. I don't think there's a danger of him shooting someone dead on a streetcar again. He's no longer a police officer. He clearly feels remorse for what he did. This is a weird one for me on a personal level. I didn't cover the trial like Christy did, but I live very close. This is about 500 meters from my house, the streetcar stop where Sammy Yateem was shot dead. And you know, the morning after that happened, walking my little boy to school, it was very surreal, just a very surreal mm-hmm. kind of situation. And, you know, I'm glad that we have that iPhone video of the night so that we know what happened. And I think it was really jarring for people to hear those shots. I mean, Yateem was lying on the floor of the streetcar and then they tased him, of course, after he was apparently dead. So it's an upsetting thing for the city, an upsetting thing for Mr. Yateem's family. I don't think they're going to be happy when Forcillo gets out of jail, but he is going to have served his sentence or served enough of his sentence that he's earned parole. And, you know, that's the way the system works.
John Paul?
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, I don't feel he's a risk to anyone else. When he said the words, I failed as a police officer in the worst possible way, and I've taken the life of a young man who needed my help, that sentence in itself, for me, kind of encapsulates exactly what took place. And the fact that he can recognize that and say those words out loud, I mean, obviously, you can obviously from time to time go, well, he's going to say that because that's what he should say. But it feels to me like he is sincere. It sounds like he has a plan to move on with his life and, again, get back into the real world and start contributing. And I think our system is built to do just that. And, you know, outside of the fact that I can get how some people are angered, I think this is the right move.
Let's talk about your story, Robert. You're the Queen's Park Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star, talking today about the change in tone, let's call it, that the province is taking with the beer stores.
Yeah, as you and Amanda were saying earlier in the show, it's a clear change in tone. Rod Phillips became the finance minister on June 20th after Vic Fedeli's demotion to economic development and Premier Ford's massive shuffle. 12 ministers changed. And I think the government is trying to reboot. This beer store debacle was becoming an obsession at the cabinet table before. And I think it's clear that the government wants to say that this is not the only thing on the agenda, that yes, it is important to us to get beer and wine in corner stores, but not at any cost. I thought that what Mr. Phillips said today was important because he said, look, we have many priorities and we're going to be purposeful about this. It doesn't mean writing a check for $1 billion, which it could cost. I know that, you know, Mr. Fedeli and the premier have said that that's fantastical and it'll never be that much. But the bottom line is you break a contract, you try to legislate an end to a contract, you pass legislation that you haven't enacted, breaking a contract, a 10-year deal that the previous government had signed. And at what cost? So that you can have beer in variety stores? It's very, very, it was very strange how it became the government's top priority, and I don't think it helped them.
Christy, Robert, I think, was right to use the word obsession, because if you speak to some even light detractors of this government, they will point to this as one of the issues. Why are they so hyper-focused on this? Why do they care so much about this? It did resonate with the public that way.
Yeah, it resonated with me that way. It was a fixation on changing an already pretty reasonable beer and wine liquor situation. So I think this is a smart change in tone. I don't think this is any kind of hill to die on for this government. They have bigger fights coming, and they may be, you know, they should squirrel their resources and fight those properly.
John?
You know, it's almost sounding very grown-up like, isn't it, over there? I think that's good. I think this tone is required to change because, as Christy mentioned, there are bigger fights coming. Certainly, teachers is one that maybe pops into my mind the most. And I think if they start to, you know, basically present their case to the public that we're listening to both sides, we're making changes, we're hearing you, we're not breaking contracts, we're going to negotiate. I think that sends the right message on so many different levels.
Yeah, grown up and reasonable is the tone that is starting to take shape.
Yeah. Who would have thought?
It's only taken a year and a bit, but they got there, so eventually. Taking some time. Christy Blatchford, Robert Benzie, John Pohl, thank you all.
Thanks,
thank you.
Thank you.